ready to proceed.
May it please the court, Justice Holland, Chief Justice Steele, Justice Berger, good morning to you all. My name is Robert Goff. I'm representing the appellant, Eugene Madry, in this appeal, direct appeal from Superior Court decision, essentially denying a pretrial suppression motion in the Superior Court. The essential issue that I see before the court is whether or not the case of state, Maryland versus Wilson, which was mentioned in my colleague's opposing brief, its bright line rule that a passenger in a motor vehicle stopped for a motor vehicle offense can not only be asked to leave the car, that's not exactly what happened here initially, but that is the rule of Maryland versus Wilson, but whether or not the type of inquiry that is usually justified under a Terry stop or under section 1902 of Title 11, which is sort of our Terry stop statute, whether that inquiry can be made of that passenger simply because they are a passenger in a motor vehicle that was stopped.
Now, you didn't cite Maryland v. Wilson in your brief, did you?
I did not. That was cited in my opposing counsel's brief.
And you didn't file a reply brief?
I did not.
And why didn't you file a reply brief?
I didn't think of it. I didn't think of this argument at the time.
Well, it's surprising for us to have an oral argument start where the linchpin is a case you never cited and then you never filed a reply brief.
I agree, Your Honor, and for purposes of appellate practice in the future, I will not only keep that in mind, but use that as an important point in my practice, and I apologize. At any rate, Your Honors, that was the case that was cited, and that is the rule that the opposing counsel appears to rely upon. I'll base my argument more now on my actual argument.
Well, no, you can talk about Maryland v. Wilson all you want, but I also was, since I didn't find it, I didn't remember reading it in your brief, and I didn't think you filed a reply brief. I also looked at Judge Hurley's ruling. He didn't cite that. He seems to say that you never get to Maryland v. Wilson, which is everybody out of the car, because the conversation in this case was taking place while your client was seated. And it was only based on the fidgeting and apparent apprehension of your client that he said, well, get out of the car. So, and, you know, we can assume, at least under these facts, this wasn't a Maryland v. Wilson case. The officer was content to let the person sit in the car until they started acting nervous and fidgety. Is that correct?
I think you're correct, Your Honor, insofar as that addresses part of the argument that I made on appeal. I think, on the other hand, that the main argument that I'm relying upon is that the initial inquiry, which occurred before there was any fidgety behavior described by Officer DuPont, and that is walking to my client's side of the motor vehicle, asking him for identification, asking him his name, and then asking him, even before he was fidgety, whether he was on probation.
Can you help me out with something? We seem to have recently a rash of these cases involving probation officers acting with or as police officers. What in the world, it struck me, is a probation officer doing participating in a traffic stop? What's going on?
Here's what I believe is going on, Your Honor, and this is not unusual. Probation officer DuPont and Officer Rosenblum act as a team together in many traffic stops in the city of Wilmington. One is a police officer, one's a probation officer. And he states right in the record, which I did cite, thankfully, in my brief, that the purpose that they have is they are searching for probationers who are violating their probation by committing crimes in the city of Wilmington. And specifically, they're searching for, generally speaking, the unlawful use of narcotics and weapons. So
okay,
they state that's their purpose.
Okay, so fine, that makes perfect sense from a common sense point of view. How does that affect the standard for stop and frisk and for searching vehicles and for searching people's dwellings under some theory that probation officers have a wider scope or less of a burden in establishing probable cause before they search or reasonable suspicion before they stop and frisk? Or when does this probation officer versus police officer threshold begin to gray between or begin to merge? How do we distinguish one from the other, or should we?
In this particular case, I'll try to address how I think that plays out. Initially, no one knows that my client's on probation. He's just someone else in the car. They don't know his name or anything about it. And I believe that the standard for any kind of stop, whether it would be a probation officer's stop and search or a police officer's stop and search of an individual, that you view that from the standpoint of the knowledge that the police officer or the law enforcement officer has at the time. So we have two people at the car, and initially I think probation doesn't come into it, because before the inquiry is made as to who's on probation or whether my client's on probation, he's just another person, and he's conducting investigation, or whether he should be conducting investigation is really the question in this case with my client. But that's what he's doing.
Now, in this case, I think the record reflects that they'd seen the driver in the same car smoking marijuana on a prior occasion and did nothing.
That's correct.
And then they recognized the driver going by, and he runs the stop sign, the light, whatever it was, he didn't stop, and they pull this driver over for that traffic violation. Is that the fact?
That is, as my understanding. I'm not 100% sure, Your Honor, that they recognized him as he was driving by. I just don't remember that, but that may be the case if that's what the record reflects. But they did recognize him at some point during the course of the stop, before it really evolved very far, that he was an individual they had seen smoking marijuana in that car a couple of weeks before. They didn't, however, recognize my client, didn't know his name, and hadn't seen him in that motor vehicle before. To address the second part of Chief Justice Steele's question, I think that the probation aspect of it comes into play perhaps during the second portion, and that is whether or not the frisk that occurs afterwards, after Officer DuPont knows that my client's on probation, that then Your Honors have to decide, I believe, whether or not there's some more deferential standard.
Back you up for a second. We start out with a situation where the driver, I believe, has been identified as a probationer. Your client, the passenger, has not been identified at all.
Correct.
In terms of when the stop begins. The probation officer goes to your client's side of the car and asks him for identification, correct?
Yes, sure.
And the person gives him a name but no identification, says he doesn't have any identification, right?
That's correct, Your Honor.
At which point the very next question is, are you on probation? And
right.
The answer was yes, and a variety of things occurred after that. Is it your position that a probation officer is authorized to ask a person who has been detained whether that person is on probation?
No, Your Honor, that would not be my position. And not only that, but from the last thing that Your Honor said, I perceive that to be the essential problem of the case from the state's perspective, and that is that my client is then detained at that point without any, I think, any reasonable basis. Officer DuPont said he had no reason to believe and testified to the fact that he had no reason to believe my client was engaged in any type of criminal activity or behavior at the time that he approached the vehicle, at the time that he asked for the identification, at the time that he asked whether he was on probation or not.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, it, for purposes of your argument at least, it doesn't matter what happened, whether he fidgeted, whether he started sweating, whether he did anything that indicated that he was uncomfortable, that aroused suspicions or what have you, whether he was found carrying weapons, drugs, or anything else in a subsequent search, because at the very outset, none of that would have happened if the probation officer had not asked the question, are you on probation?
Correct. That is one of my positions.
Okay.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Would the situation have changed had the driver not identified the fact that he was on probation and they had recognized him as someone who had smoked marijuana a couple of weeks before, but apparently was all right to smoke marijuana? It was a marijuana-free day that day. Did that add anything to the probation officer's reasonable suspicion that the passenger might be a probationer that would justify asking that question?
Your Honor, I don't think it adds much, if anything, to it. And the reason I would say that is that I think that that might fall in the same category as the sort of general surrounding circumstances of the stop. One of those general surrounding circumstances that is almost uniformly cited and is sort of a mantra is that they're in a high drug area. And you hear that in almost every single case. And the courts have really not generally used that as a linchpin for justifying a search. It might be something that adds as flavor or icing to the cake, but it isn't sort of a basis. And I think that's because it really isn't indicative of the individual involved, of the actual individual who is being searched. It isn't behavior.
In this case, did the officer, does the record reflect the officer ever said the nervousness and the fidgeting made the officer concerned about his safety?
The record reflects at two points in two different ways that. It reflects that after he was stopped and after he was asked for identification and whether he was on probation, that he then became fidgety while he's in the car. That was the officer DuPont's testimony on the stand. I did bring out during his testimony and did cite in my brief as well the fact that in the police reports or the report that Officer DuPont wrote, there is no mention made of my client becoming fidgety until after he's been taken out of the car. That's a change of testimony. And I don't know if he may have made a finding concerning that.
Well, in the last page of his opinion, he finds that the person was fidgety while he was still in the car. It says, in addition, while Madre was still in the car and while talking to him, DuPont noted Madre was quite fidgety. So he's got it in the car.
Sure. And that is what Officer DuPont testified to on the stand. So I gather he must have made that finding inconsistent or different from what the police report says.
Well, I don't want to use up all your rebuttal time.
That's all right, Your Honor. I didn't have much to say at the initial outset. As such, I put up 10 minutes, but I'll just finish up with a minute if I might, and I will eat up my rebuttal time to that degree. The appellant's point is essentially that the officers were out looking for drug dealers and so on, which is their job, but that they engaged in a traffic stop of an individual and then ended up searching his passenger, and that essentially the Terry standard of the nature of the stop or detention or seizure be tailored to fit the initial justification of it, that standard has been violated in this particular search, and that essentially Mr. Madre was subjected to almost a blanket inquiry. It's anyone that's stopped is going to be asked by these two individuals, these two officers, if they're stopped in the right area of the city, I gather, they're going to be asked, if there are, what their identification is, whether they're a passenger or an occupant of the motor vehicle, and they're going to be asked whether they're on probation, because that's what they're looking for. And this was a fishing expedition, and the basis of the stop was a pretext for that. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
If it pleases the court.
This was, as Mr. Goff said, part of Operation Safe Streets, where probation officers and police officers go out together and try to track down probationers who are breaking the law and therefore breaking the terms of their probation. Factually, just to clear something up, the officers, police officer, I believe there were two probation officers in the car, heard the loud noise, then saw that the, realized the noise was coming from this Chevrolet Lumina that was approaching them. The Lumina went by them, rolled through the stop sign. The police began to follow the car. The car then pulled over.
Now, the loud noise was the radio, right?
Was the radio in the car. And which the officer testified was a violation of the Wilmington noise ordinance. And then the car went through the stop sign, and that, of course, was a motor vehicle violation. The car then pulled over. The police went up. The police car pulled up to the side of the car. The windows were tinted. They couldn't see inside, so the officer shined a flashlight or something, or a spotlight in. And at that point, I believe, recognized the driver. I think it's that point he recognized the driver as, actually both the officer DuPont, probation officer DuPont, and the police officer recognized the driver as a probationer, and B, as an individual they had come across several weeks earlier in the same car, rolling a marijuana joint on, as the Chief Justice noted, a marijuana-free day. I have no idea why. That maybe there were just maybe one joint you get a buy. I don't know what their...
But a loud radio is...
That loud radio will get them every time, but...
That's safe streets.
But for some reason, they gave him a buy on this day for a single joint. But I realize my friend Mr. Goff does not place much weight in the being in the high drug area, because, again, we get that all the time. However, this is Riverside, and as high drug areas go, this is a high drug area. So we have the high drug area. And also the probationer driver, and a probationer driver who was seen not too long in the past with marijuana. The question then is, can probation officer DuPont, at the time that Officer Rosenblum, I believe the police officer, is going through license registration proof of insurance with the driver, who has no driver's license, and gives a false name also, as it turns out. But DuPont then goes around to the passenger side and starts questioning the passenger.
Now, let's move to a hypothetical.
Yes.
Tell us your understanding of the law independent of these facts. So someone goes through a stop sign. The driver is being questioned for going through the stop sign. And there's a passenger sitting in the car in my hypothetical with their hands folded, just minding their own business. And we'll assume that under Maryland versus Wilson, someone could say, get out of the car.
Yes.
And the person's still doing nothing that would make anyone apprehensive. They get out of the car, and the police person says, who are you?
Yes.
And you give an answer. What else can they do? Can they say, who are you? Can they say, are you on probation? Can they say, show me some identification? What has the passenger signed up for when the driver commits a motor vehicle violation?
The cases that I've cited a number of them in my brief, because Maryland v. Wilson goes as far as getting the passenger out of the car, but there was no questioning involved there, because as the passenger in the Wilson case got out of the car, the drugs fell out, so we never even got that far. So Maryland v. Wilson does not have anything to say about questioning the passenger. However, my position is, and I think the position taken by the cases that I've cited, all of which seem to cite Florida v. Bostic, is that it's okay. And as a practical matter, this is what the police do. I think it's the New Jersey case that I cite. It's the Massachusetts case, Commonwealth of Cambridge. I mean, it's a very elaborate analysis they go through about this case, but the Massachusetts court just seems to take the question of the passenger and the driver. I mean, this is just routine, and this is how the police get that little hunch up to
suspicion. My question is, what can they do? Let's suppose it's a plain vanilla traffic violation.
Right.
No danger to anyone, and the passenger gets out of the car, and the police say, "Show me some identification." And the person says, "Well, I don't have any identification." What's the passenger signed up for next? They say, "You don't have any identification. You're coming with me," or
the passenger can say, "Not even. I don't have any identification." The passenger can say, "I don't want to show you my identification," and that's what the passenger can say. Because the police officer can certainly ask questions under the Florida v. Bostic. The police often go on the bus and say, "Oh, let me see your bus ticket identification, and may I search your luggage?"
Well, let's invoke the birds of a feather flock together rule. They know that the driver is on probation. Is it then reasonable for a probation officer, understanding the lesser, as you put it in your brief, lesser expectation of privacy of a person on probation, is it fair under the circumstances, hunch theory or otherwise, to assume that, well, if the driver's on probation and the passenger's obviously with the driver, perhaps he's also on probation, is it fair to ask the next question after Justice Holland's hypothetical? With that in mind, can he ask the passenger whether they're on probation or not?
Well, I certainly think, now, Justice Holland...
The probation officer asking the question.
Justice Holland's question was the hypothetical, was the plain, I think Justice Holland did plain vanilla traffic stop, a soccer mom or something like that. Here, we don't have that. I mean, there is something suspicious about this stop. I mean, that's the reason they made it in the first place. This is more than your plain vanilla traffic stop. And so... We have probationer driving. We have another individual in the passenger seat. We have they're out there for the very purpose of tracking down probationers who are violating their probation. They're in the infamous Riverside area, apparently cruising around. I mean, there are all kinds of red flags going up in these officers' heads as they're making this stop. And this for them is
how do you read Judge Herlihy's ruling? One way to read the ruling is that the asking the person out of the car and patting them down was based on the officer's concern about the officer's safety.
Yes.
Is that what this case is, an officer safety search?
With Officer DuPont did say, and the DuPont was pretty clear about this, the defendant was still in the car at the time he started to get fidgety. And DuPont said, "This made me nervous. And so I told him to get out of the car." And at that point, I started to frisk him. Now, at this time, the defendant, Madry, had also told DuPont he was a probationer, and Judge Hurley cites I think it was one of the state's exhibit, the probation agreement was, and of course it was the standard, "I agree at any time to a search of my person, place, residence," and so on.
Well, that's earlier on.
Yes, but in the decision.
What we are trying to find out is what we're called upon to review and decide. And so we have two choices here. We have an officer safety search based on fidgeting, or we have a probationer who signed a form that said, "If I'm out and about, you can search me anytime you want," and we have a consented to search of a probationer. The way I read, although Judge Hurley, he refers to the form,
yes,
when you get to the last page of his opinion, it reads like an officer safety search.
Yes, yes. I think Judge Hurley was, if I read his opinion correctly, he notes the form at the beginning, saying, "But I'm not even going to get to that point. I'm going to say that even if the fellow hadn't been a probationer, what the probation officer did, and let's just assume now that he's a police officer and this is a standard stop, what the police officer did for officer safety purposes was okay. So we're not even going to get to the he signed away his civil rights part of it. But that isn't the background. I mean, Judge Hurley could have gone in that direction, but he did not. He said, look, I'm going to play it just as a standard police officer traffic stop, and a police officer in this situation, not knowing the fellow was on probation, could have done what the probation officer
did. Well, that's why I went back to focusing on the exact facts, because it would seem, in what I characterize as the plain vanilla stop, not knowing the passenger is on probation, you're not in a drug area, an officer could see a passenger who was conducting themselves in a way that made the officer nervous.
Sure. Sure.
And the state position is, once you start making the officer nervous, the officer can take appropriate steps to secure his own safety.
Certainly. And as the United States Supreme Court noted forcefully in Maryland versus Wilson, the reason they're going to allow the officer to get the passengers out of the car without any reason whatsoever is simply because these motor vehicle stops are very dangerous. And it doesn't take much to get an officer nervous during the course of the motor vehicle stop.
Well, notwithstanding my brethren's focus here, do we ever get to whether there was an officer safety issue if the second question that was asked was one that was not permissible?
Yes, you do, because if you simply ignore the fact that the defendant was on probation, which apparently Judge Hurley did in his analysis, final analysis, then that goes nowhere.
Well, what I'm getting at is this. There was a progression here.
Yes.
And Mr. Madry did not start fidgeting until after the questioning got going. So if we ratchet back to the point at which a probation officer comes up to the window and says, who are you? And he says, I'm whoever I am. And then the next question is, do you have identification? No, I don't have identification. Next question, are you on probation? If that question was not permissible under the circumstances, then we don't get to an officer safety question, do we? Because the fidgeting and the, you know, I was nervous, so I asked him to get out of the car and on, none of that would have taken place.
But if the court finds that the fidgeting is the fruit of the poisonous question, that under Wong Sung and Silverhorn Lumber Company and all those cases, then I suppose. However, my position is that asking him whether he's not or not he's on probation under the facts of this case was permissible.
Okay, and that's what I'd like to focus on for a minute. First of all, would you agree that Mr. Madry was detained?
I'm sorry, was what?
Was detained at the time that he was asked the question.
Oh, yes, under the...
Okay.
Just under Maryland v. Wilson, all the passengers are detained just as a practical matter. I mean...
Okay. So why is it that a probation officer can basically come up to somebody and say, tell me, are you on probation?
Well, because under jurisprudence of the United States Supreme Court, simply asking questions doesn't implicate the Fourth Amendment.
Feel compelled to answer?
No, as long as... as I answered the... Justice Holland's questions, you can just tell the officer that you're not going to answer any questions. I mean, you've done nothing wrong at this point.
Interestingly, at least to me, what if Mr. Madry had lied and said, no, I'm not on probation? Where do we go from there?
Well, then the probation officer wouldn't have known it. And the whole point of him having signed his rights away when he agreed to probation wouldn't be in the would not be in
even
the
though he
analysis.
Even though he didn't produce any identification?
Even though he didn't produce any identification. I don't think the probation officer can simply assume because he doesn't have identification on him that he's therefore a probationer.
And sorry.
Now, now under the analysis that Judge Hurley used, it really wouldn't make any difference because Judge Hurley was using a different analysis, saying just leaving the probation part of it out of the equation, saying it was still reasonable for DuPont to get him out of the car and give him a frisk for purposes of his safety. And then, of course, he feels what Officer DuPont described rather eloquently as a bundle of heroin. Apparently, Officer DuPont knows exactly what a bundle of heroin feels like. I certainly can't argue with him on that one.
Well,
and that's not an issue here. Yes, ma'am.
Explain to me, if you could, how it is that a question that says, are you on probation, relates to asking a passenger, are you on probation, relates to stopping the car for breathing through a stop sign.
It doesn't. It doesn't. And I believe it's the... I think it's the Hickman case, New Jersey case, that specifically says that the questions that the police ask of the passenger need not have anything to do with the traffic stop whatsoever. The police can go ahead and ask questions. And again, this relates back to the standard police practice of asking driver and passenger certain questions, and if the answers don't add up, like where you're coming from, where you're going, or typical ones, then we have heightened suspicion that these individuals are doing more than just driving through Delaware.
So there's no requirement that there be a reasonable relationship between what you're asking and the reason for your stop?
Not that I could find. None that I could find.
Not that courts? Under Caldwell. Our court's decision. No?
No. Terrible at case names. I'm going to confess that right now.
Well, what I'm reading from says, I believe it's a quote from the Caldwell decision, says that a Terry stop, first the stop must be justified at its inception by a reasonable suspicion of criminal activity as defined in Terry. Second, the stop and inquiry must be reasonably related in scope to the justification for their initiation.
Yes,
so
that's the problem where we have a routine traffic stop, and then all of a sudden the reason for the stop is over. Police officer writes out the ticket, but then continues the detention past the time of the stop. But, you know, as long as the stop itself is reasonably related to the reason for the stop, that is a traffic stop, any questions you ask have to come within the period of time, as it were, that it takes to write up the ticket and run the license registration, you know, any wants or warrants.
So the only relationship is a one of time?
Well, it's basically a temporal.
You can ask whatever questions you can get away with real quickly before the traffic stop.
If you want. I mean, the cases, the passenger, asking the passenger question cases that I've seen seem to put no limits on the types of questions the officer can ask the passenger. And again, under the rule of Florida v. Bostick, the courts have held that, you know, you don't implicate the Fourth Amendment simply by asking questions. It's just not there. And certainly, asking to, boarding a bus and asking for your ticket and your identification and to search your luggage. If the Fourth Amendment's not implicated by that, it's certainly not implicated in this case.
And that's the case where the U.S. Supreme Court said everyone on the bus knew they were free to leave and not answer the question.
Sure.
And the same is true here?
Certainly.
Mr. Madry was free to just get up
I'm out of here.
Okay.
I'm out of here. And if the officer said you're not, then the officer's in trouble. And the case is going nowhere because then the constitutional rights have been violated. But the passenger is free to leave. Now, as a practical matter, very often the passenger can't. Obviously, a stop on Interstate 95, the passenger is going nowhere. In this case, I'm not sure how far away Mr. Madry was from his home, but maybe he just decided to walk. But here he elected to answer the officer's questions. That was his election. That's the law. It seems to be. The court has no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a few comments in reference to Mr. Donovan's statements. I think that the one thing I would like to address is a matter of record in the hearing, and that is that Officer DuPont made it crystal clear in his testimony that Eugene Madre was not free to leave, and he was not free to leave at the point in time where DuPont actually approached the side of the motor vehicle, and that was cited in my brief, and it's stated in the transcript.
Succinctly, what did the officers do here that violated your client's rights? Where's the beginning point of the problem here?
This was not a traffic stop, and it wasn't treated like a traffic stop. Two officers approached the motor vehicle. Unlike most traffic stops, it wasn't an officer approaching the driver and asking him a question. It was two officers. They went there for the purpose of investigating both of the occupants of that motor vehicle, and they did such. One, they probably had a basis to do because he was being arrested for a motor vehicle offense. The other, they had no basis, no reason, no suspicion. They might have had a hunch, they might have a feeling, they might have experience, but there's nothing in the record to justify that. And that violates his right. It's akin, in my mind, Your Honor, to approaching a bus full of people close to the border and demanding that all of them show their papers, even though just because they're Latino or whatever. There's just nothing there. And that's as succinct as I can make it. It just
wasn't. Well, as I understand the facts here, you had a loud radio in a car that went through a stop sign.
Absolutely.
But you seem to suggest that basically these officers were patrolling the neighborhood hoping that they would encounter cars that committed traffic violations so they could justify a stop that would lead them to further investigate possible drug activity.
They all but said it during their testimony. I suggested, I submitted, yes, that's exactly what I would say was happening. And there's nothing wrong with it, I would submit, if they had something to connect up some real suspicions to Mr. Madrid, and they just didn't have it here. That's essentially it. And there was one further hypothetical, I think, that was posed to Mr. Donovan, and you were, I believe Your Honor's asked what would have happened if Mr. Madry had decided to walk away, and I just would submit that Mr. Donovan's supposition that he would have been permitted to walk away, given the testimony that was presented at that hearing, and the nature of this investigation, and Officer DuPont's own statements that he wasn't free to go, that simply wasn't going to happen that way. If you have no further questions, I'm going to sit down.
Thank you. We'll take the case under advisement.
Please rise.